To describe estimates of the margin of victory for IRV, I'm going to cover the following topics. After each topic, we'll return with updates to this overview. A margin of victory has a variety of uses, but I'm going to focus on its application to risk-limiting audits. Risk-limiting audits can help make our elections more trustworthy. Risk-limiting audits have used the margin of victory to help determine how many ballots need to be manually audited. When the margin of victory is smaller, more ballots have to be manually audited, other things being equal. One of the challenges for IRV risk-limiting audits is that calculating the IRV margin of victory can quickly become infeasible as the numbers of candidates and voters increase. This has raised some concerns about whether IRV risk-limiting audits are always possible. However, there are other options. A risk-limiting audit can instead use an estimate for the margin of victory, specifically a lower bound. Risk-limiting audits already use and produce one-sided estimates, some of which may be off by an order of magnitude or more. And we're beginning to see proposals for IRV risk-limiting audits, including several by Sarwate et al., which do not require calculating the margin of victory exactly. Two goals of this effort were to develop a first set of estimates for an IRV margin of victory, and also to give those estimates a fairly rigorous foundation. Before we look at estimates, we'll first look at specifications for two other important concepts, IRV and margin of victory. There are a variety of IRV implementations with different features. Rather than addressing each implementation separately, this model of an IRV contest and its tabulation is used. Notably, the model tabulation eliminates only one candidate per round and continues until there is just one candidate remaining. An IRV implementation can be consistent with this model, regardless of whether it requires that a voter rank all candidates or whether it imposes a maximum number of rankings per ballot. Many IRV implementations are either directly consistent with this model or can be extended for auditing purposes to be consistent with it. This is the general definition of margin of victory that I use. It is the minimum total number of ballots that must, in some combination, be added and removed in order for the set of contest winners to change with some positive probability. This definition is consistent with the usual notion of margin of victory for plurality elections. However, it's not the only way to extend that concept. It comes in when you're dealing with ties, resolving ties.
Let's hold all questions to the end.
Upper bounds for a margin of victory can be demonstrated by example. In contrast, lower bounds are demonstrated by lack of an example. One has to prove that any fewer number of additions and removals cannot change who the winner is. So now we're ready to look at the estimates. Here are the four primary estimates, two upper bounds and two lower bounds. The last estimate, the best path lower bound, will be of most interest for risk-limiting audits. These estimates can all be calculated using only tabulation vote totals, without additionally looking at individual ballots. The greatest computational complexity for these estimates is C squared log C, where C is the number of candidates. So for a contest with 1,000 candidates, these estimates can be calculated by computer in less than a second. I'm going to illustrate these estimates with this example contest. Here we see the candidates and their round-by-round tabulation vote totals. The candidates are listed in reverse elimination order, so the winner is listed first. The number of candidates C in this example is 5. The last two candidates' upper bound is the difference in vote totals for the only two candidates in round C minus 1. That difference is both the margin of survival for the winner in that round and also the margin of elimination for that round. For the next upper bound, to calculate the winner's survival upper bound, We first calculate for each round the margin of survival for the winner, which is the difference in vote totals for the winner and the candidate that is eliminated in that round. The winner survival upper bound is the smallest of those margins of survival in the first C-1 rounds. The winner survival upper bound is the closest the winner came to being eliminated within a single round. You may have noticed that within a round, the vote totals are not always in sequence by value. For what follows, it's useful to sort the vote totals within each round. After doing that, a row won't be dedicated to a single candidate, so we'll omit the candidate names. To calculate the single elimination lower path bound, we first calculate for each round the margin of single elimination, which is the difference between the two lowest vote totals. Within each round, a margin of single elimination measures how far the tabulation was from eliminating a different candidate. The single elimination path lower bound is the smallest of those margins of single elimination in any of the first C-1 rounds. Adding and removing fewer ballots than the single elimination path lower bound cannot change any eliminations, and so cannot change who the winner is. To introduce the best path lower bound, we'll first look at the single elimination path lower bound from a different perspective. Associated with an IRV tabulation is a weighted, directed, acyclic graph. Each vertex represents a tabulation round and the set of continuing candidates that start that round. Each directed edge represents a single elimination with a weight that is equal to the margin of a single elimination. An edge weight quantifies a limited capacity or bottleneck for tolerating additions and removals of ballots while still staying on the path. Exceeding that capacity will cause a revised tabulation to depart from the single elimination path into uncharted territory, perhaps never to return, and producing a different winner. An easy way to guarantee the same winner is to stay on the path by respecting the limited capacity of every bottleneck on the path. The path bottleneck is the limited capacity of the entire path and is the smallest individual bottleneck along the path. So another way to describe the single elimination path lower bound is that it is the path bottleneck for the single elimination path. We can sometimes get a better lower bound by using multiple eliminations to bypass small bottlenecks. Using some terminology from risk limiting audits, a multiple elimination of K candidates treats the K lowest candidates, in this example, two candidates, the lowest two candidates, as if they were combined into a single supercandidate. If that combined supercandidate still has the lowest vote total and is the next candidate to be eliminated, we have a usable multiple elimination. The margin of that multiple elimination is the difference between the votes for the next higher candidate and the sum of all the votes for the K lowest candidates. A usable multiple elimination always acts as a detour. A revised tabulation always returns to the single elimination path as long as the number of additions and removals is less than the margin of multiple elimination. So a usable multiple elimination imposes its own bottleneck, but in some cases, that bottleneck provides a less restrictive path around two or more single eliminations. The usable multiple eliminations for a contest might consist only of the single eliminations. There might be a few more, as in our example contest, or in other contests, potentially every multiple elimination might be usable. Every path of usable multiple elimination guarantees the same winner. So to estimate the margin of victory, we want to find a path that has the largest path bottleneck. The best path lower bound is that largest path bottleneck. Calculating the best path lower bound can be done efficiently even though the number of paths that need to be checked can increase exponentially with the number of candidates. Standard algorithms can be used or adapted to find the best path in C-squared time. Finding the largest bottleneck path is similar to finding the longest path, except that the length of a path is the smallest of its edge weights rather than the sum of its edge weights. So we have our four estimates, which have the following relationships with each other and with the margin of victory. The better lower bound is the best path lower bound. The better upper bound is the winner survival upper bound. There's one more set of estimates I'll mention briefly. Sometimes an IRV tabulation will stop as soon as a winner is found, even though there are still more than two continuing candidates. If that is the only information we have, the four primary estimates cannot be calculated. However, other related estimates can be calculated, although their accuracy will usually not be as good. That section of the paper has some recent corrections, so make sure you have a current copy of the paper. So we have some estimates that are quick to calculate, but how accurate are they? And particularly in a worst case. From an asymptotically worst case perspective, these estimates can differ from the margin of victory by a factor that grows unbounded. We can demonstrate this with a pair of contests that have identical tabulation vote totals. As a result, they also have the same best path lower bound and the same winner survival upper bound. In this case, the margin of victory cannot be determined but from just the tabulation vote totals. But inspection of the ballot details show that these two contests have some very different margins of victory. The estimates can't be accurate for both contests. No estimate can do better for these contests if it is based only on tabulation vote totals. Better estimates in these asymptotic worst cases require looking at individual ballots. I should also mention that there are also related examples that demonstrate an unbounded ratio for either the upper bound or the lower bound, but not necessarily both at the same time, as the number of voters increases, but the number of candidates stays fixed. So it's not necessarily required that the number of candidates grows. Fortunately, we don't live in an entirely worst-case world, nor in an asymptotically large world. It's helpful to be aware of the worst cases, but for risk-limiting audits, what is of more practical importance is the frequency distribution of the estimates for actual elections. To get a sense of what the distributions look like, I calculated estimates for two sets of IRV contests, one set from Australia, the other from California. There are many ways to evaluate these estimates. A full evaluation would require a context of specific risk-limiting audits, protocols, and profiles of audit differences. So for now, we'll look at the best available lower bound and upper bound expressed as a percentage of first-round votes. Here are some selected descriptive statistics based on some rather ad hoc criteria. I'll highlight three items. First, the percentages of contests with a lower bound greater than 10%. Those are contests that perhaps could be audited fairly easily with these lower bounds, even if the lower bounds are not very accurate. Second, the percentages of contests that estimate the margin of victory exactly. And third, the percentages of contests with a lower bound less than 5% and a ratio of estimates greater than 2. Those are the contests where we'd most want better estimates before doing a risk-limiting audit. Here is a graph of the data for the Australia contests. Each contest shows the range between the lower and upper bound expressed as a percentage of first-round votes. In these graphs, the easy opportunities for risk-limiting audits are on the right, and the challenges are found on the left. The tall vertical bars in the bottom left are where there is the biggest need for improving these estimates. Here's a similar graph for the California elections. The California data has a higher proportion of close contests and of contests that might be close but need more accurate estimates. In reviewing this data, my assessment is that for many contests, these estimates might be sufficient for risk-limiting audits, and that there are significant opportunities for pilots of IRV risk-limiting audits. However, both sets of data show that for other contests, there is a need for more accurate estimates or for the exact calculations that the next speaker will talk about. So now we're ready for conclusions. A foundational observation is that risk-limiting audits can use lower bounds for the margin of victory in place of the actual margin of victory. Some estimates for the IRV margin of victory can be calculated from the tabulation vote totals, requiring at most C squared log C time and linear space. In worst case scenarios, these estimates have an unbounded ratio with the true value. However, worst case accuracy is not the most appropriate measure for an estimate's usefulness for risk-limiting audits. The best path lower bound can be used in risk-limiting audits for many contests, but some contests will need more accurate estimates, which will likely require more computational effort. And finally, thanks to the following people who have offered helpful advice and encouragement about this subject and this paper. We've now got time for questions.
So when you ask questions, state your name and affiliation.
Hi, I'm Anand Sarwate from UC San Diego. And I was wondering, so you said the margin, you're defining the margin to be the number of ballots that have to be added or changed. So do you have any sort of a sense of what margins look like just if, you know, just for ballots added, like somebody finds a box of uncounted ballots somewhere? You know, how those sort of calculations might differ in...
Okay, yeah. In a regular plurality election, there's a kind of a symmetry between adding and removing ballots. If you have a certain margin of victory, that margin of victory can be, the victory can be changed by either adding a ballot or adding ballots or removing ballots or any combination that add up to that. Within IRV, there's an asymmetry. There's a difference between adding and removing ballots. So it's important to actually include the ability to do both. If you only allow adding ballots, then that will change what kind of numbers you come up with.
Yeah. Neil McBurnett, Election Audits. So if you were going to try to characterize, or have you thought about trying to characterize the average, the distribution of margins of error for IRV elections versus plurality elections? In other words, how much harder does the very planned use of IRV make the auditing task?
Okay, that's a good question. And I haven't looked specifically at that, partly because I was looking at ranges, and you saw that for many of the elections there were some broad ranges in the estimates. Perhaps looking with some of the techniques that we'll see from the next speaker, or some more advanced estimating techniques, we'll be able to answer those questions more precisely. It is true that one way of describing what a margin of victory is it's describing how unresponsive the election is to voters, and that large, if you have a sample of elections with typically large margins of victory, that's indicating something about the political system that's operating there.
And also, do you have any idea how this would extend to other voting systems? I mean, the hair system, or, you know, multiple, I'm forgetting the name offhand, but single transferable vote. I mean, things where you're doing a whole parliament.
Yeah, so for single transferable vote, and IRV is kind of a single winner special case of single transferable vote. Single transferable vote is something that where you have multiple winners in a contest and allows you to obtain some measure of proportional representation. And there are some additional complications there, because not only are you transferring votes from losers, so to speak, but it STB also allows for some reallocations of votes from winners. And that creates some additional opportunities where some additional decision points. And my general expectation would be that, kind of other things being equal, that that would tend to at least narrow the apparent margin of victory in many cases.
Thanks.
Hi, David. My name is Jim Soper from the Voting Rights Task Force. And I'll make an observation. Maybe you can comment on it. It seems to me that for example, here in San Francisco, we've had races with 20 candidates. Mm-hmm. And at some point, some of the eliminations just get really narrow, which you get into your narrow path here. And you might come to the conclusion early on, gee, we're going to have to do a full-blown hand count.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any thoughts on coming up with an estimation or rule of thumb how we can know early on, forget the audit, full-blown hand count?
Well, that starts getting into the questions of what your protocols are for the IRV risk-limiting audits. And, I think we're going to find a variety of approaches for dealing with that. I think I would emphasize that this is kind of a first effort at establishing some estimates, some fairly easily calculated estimates, and I think I'm expecting that we're going to find additional ways of doing a better job of estimating so that the numbers that we take into a risk-limiting audit really reflect the true margin of victory.
Hi, Jeremy Epstein, SRI International. I'm wondering, from a practical perspective, how this would work. The election official puts the numbers into the magic black box and out pops a number. This is how much you need to look at as part of your risk-limiting audit. How do we explain to them that what looks to them like two elections that are fairly similar may have dramatically different results in terms of the number of ballots that need to be looked at? How do we get them to believe that there really is something behind it, it's not just magic?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I've got a ready answer for that. I'd ask the question is from an election official's perspective, are they necessarily comparing, the kinds of examples that I gave up there as worst case examples? They're interested in a particular contest and what they need to do for that. So, I think my expectation would be that an election official who is dealing with an IRV contest has some familiarity with how results can change as a result of various changes in ballots. And for example, here in San Francisco publishes the ballot records for individual ballots so that calculating these results is something that not only an election official can do, but it's something that can be done publicly with independent software as well.
Hi, Philip Stark from UC Berkeley. In thinking about risk-limiting audits, you can get a lot more efficiency instead of thinking of there being a margin of victory, thinking of there as being a bunch of margins of victory, the number of ballots that need to be altered for each of the losers in turn to become the winner.
Mm-hmm.
So partly I'm wondering whether your method extends to sort of finding that margin, that set of pairwise margins between the winner or a collection of winners and each of the losers in turn. One of the reasons for this is that you could have, by this path analysis that you're doing, a very small margin for two candidates who, because of two candidates who sort of have no chance of winning whatsoever. And if you can then sort of do the error bookkeeping to keep track of how any observed error affects each of these margins in turn, if it only affects these very wide margins for the candidates who sort of have very would require an enormous number of errors to win, mm-hmm. then it doesn't matter as much for the risk as errors that affect the two people who were in the last runoff, for instance.
Okay. I think that there are some issues for IRV risk limiting audits. The IRV risk limiting audits share some issues with plurality risk limiting audits, and there are some additional issues that are specific to IRV risk limiting audits. And how to find what is an efficient risk limiting audit protocol for IRV that begins to match or take advantage of some of the best practices for plurality elections, I think is still an outstanding area for some research and some development. I will note that, for example, some of the proposals that were made that I mentioned on the screen here, that they do some IRV risk limiting audits without actually explicitly using the margin of victory, that they break things up into individual contests and look at the margins for the margins of single elimination or margins of elimination for individual sets of eliminations. And so a key thing there is that it's not just a margin of victory that goes into the calculation, but it's the meaning and the nature of what that margin of victory is kind of gets built into the risk limiting protocol itself. And I think there's some opportunity for doing that with IRV risk limiting audits as well.
Let's thank the speaker again.